Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Broadcasting from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained paradise nation, where the Fukushima sun shines so brightly that everybody now has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb to help the economy, which is struggling because the Prime Minister used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank, as Merrill Lynch is in charge of derivatives, which caused the 2008 financial crash, which was incidentally the same year he was elected as Prime Minister to save us from it. My very special guest today has a interestingly pronounced name, yet that in lieu of a more commonplace super K would be pronounced Muller, but it's more like Müller. Right? Because it's Germanic, you know, like a Goth of some description. And we are going to be chasing the barbarians down tonight. John Molov, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thanks very much.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do first?
Okay. My main job is I'm a landscaper. I've been involved in the horticulture game most of my life, plants and landscape. And I have I started GE Free New Zealand a good 13, 14 years ago, and I've stuck with it ever since. So that's my, if you like, my cause célèbre.
Yeah. And what inspired you to kick off in this particular thing? Did you get a child damaged by some kind of terrible Monsanto product?
Not at that stage. But when I'd heard about it through some friends, it was a thing that just pricked my ears up. You know, I thought, I knew there was all sorts of nefarious things going on around the world, but then I heard this one and I thought, well, even Frankenstein couldn't come up with this one. This was serious. So it's something that I've just stuck at as my number one, if you like, action statement, you know, simply because to me it's probably, I can see the potential to have caused the most damage. So that's why I've stuck at it.
Well, can you specifically define what it is you're up against here and what potential damage you're talking about?
Well, first of all, genetic engineering is a science. Well, they call it a science. It's a methodology which where you take plants, mostly plants at this stage, although they are looking at animals like mosquitoes and salmon, and you insert into the genome of that, the genetic structure of that plant, foreign genetic material, whether that could be bacterial viruses or foreign other genetic codes. And basically, there's no way of knowing what the effect will be when you do that. And the the research that has come out more recently, in particular, shows a lot of negative effects. So it's the unpredictability of the whole thing and the potential for just untold harm to human health, environment, and so on.
Do you suspect such harm has already occurred and just getting worse?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's quite a few areas we could look at in terms of human health, environmental, and so on. But it's certainly all starting to come out now.
Would you say it's a pretty wide spectrum?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you're talking about altering the genetic structure of plants we eat quite significantly, that you get to differentiate between genetic engineering and natural breeding. It's often the GE people, the companies producing this, try and lump them together, but it's important to distinguish, because natural breeding works within species. Say a rose with a rose, that being my business, you know, apple with apple. You don't get apples breeding with salmon, you know, it just doesn't happen, or potato with a frog, because they don't do it in nature for a good reason. But when you start actually crossing across those species barriers, then you can get major issues, because you're breaking down these species integrity barriers which nature has set up, over the millions of years.
They're performing genetic bestiality.
What's that?
They're performing engineered genetic bestiality, bro.
Oh, that's the one. Yes,
they're sodomizing an animal's genetic code with a vegetable, you know.
Well, I mean, if you can imagine a sort of a frog jumping on top of a potato and, trying to mate with it, it doesn't conjure up a very good image the other way around.
And it's not a question of how much lube they use either. It's just not going to happen, man.
No matter how, of course you're taking the genes from both of them, but it really is, that never happens in nature. So this whole thing, it's not something that occurs naturally, and it's important to distinguish between, natural breeding and genetic engineering. They're completely different. Because you're breaking down these integrity barriers there, which are good, there for a good reason. And then the genetic code becomes distorted. And that will stay with us in the plants. And, of course, we ingest those plants with those foreign genes in them, as well as they've often been sprayed with toxic chemicals. And we take that in ourselves. So that's a kind of a double whammy, in a sense, that you're ingesting foreign genes as well as toxic herbicides. So it's a double whammy from the human health point of view, anyway, as consumers, because we've got to eat.
what's the specific effects of this? What have these ingesting GMO foods produced?
Well, okay, so there's a couple of things, of course. You see, when you look on the face, one of the key reasons that foods are genetically engineered, and by the way, most of the main foods that are engineered are soya, corn, canola, and cotton. So those are the four main crops. There are other ones like papaya and so on and so forth, but those are the major ones. And they're either engineered for one of two reasons. One, for herbicide resistance, so which means you can spray on Roundup, which has proven to be a toxic herbicide, directly over the soya beans or the corn. The corn survives, but the weeds all die. The other one is that it's called BT, corn or cotton, that produces its own insecticide, which is called BT, which is a naturally occurring insecticide. It's used by organic people, but they actually produce it within the plant. So those are the two main crops. Now, what you're doing when you eat that food is that you're not only getting this foreign genetic material, but also, in the case of Roundup, you are because that stuff's absorbed, that chemical Roundup, which is a herbicide absorbed by the plant, so you end up eating it. And that's been shown, Roundup has been shown, linked to numerous, everything from A to Z of disorders, autism right through. So it's you're ingesting toxins as well as foreign genetic material. And in many ways, the results can be unknown because you're just putting it on the whole, you know, consumers, particularly in the States, are just eating all this stuff and they can't, it's not labeled and they don't know what, you know, what the effect can be. The only way you can, because there's been no proper safety studies on feeding studies on humans, the only one way you can look at it actually is as to the effect of it is what they've done is there's thousands of doctors in the US who say, who recognize the dangers of GMOs, and they've said to their patients, look, they come in with all sorts of diseases, whether it's lymphoma or you name it, the A to Z of diseases, and they say, I want you to do one thing. I want you to stop eating foods with GMOs, which is not easy in the States, so maybe that means fresh food, organic, whatever. And just about every single case, without exception, these symptoms disappear within a quick time. So that's kind of like a reverse testing. You know, in other words, you take it out and the symptoms all go. And they've also done it with animals. They've been feeding them GE and they get sick and they lose their fertility and all sorts of terrible things happen. Then they switch it to non-GMO feed. Bingo! All those symptoms disappear. The animals are happy. So it's, you know what I'm saying? You hasn't been tested on humans. So the only way you can do it is take people out, you know, with illness, take them away from that food and see what happens. And on every occasion, they, or animals, and they come right. So it's a bit of a, quite a profound.
The United States currently spends more money on health care than any other country on earth. And a recent study has also confirmed that it kills up to 40,000 people a year, just their health system alone. And that's only accidents. That doesn't include common medical practice, which wind up killing patients a lot of the time.
Yes, I heard it was like 750K a year, you know, all over with modern medicine in the States, but it's a lot.
Well, you know, it's always conservative estimates, but even at 40,000, it still makes it the biggest killer in the America, by far. Well,
if you look at the health statistics, particularly in the States, now you have to realize the States is the home of GE. That's where, you know, a lot of the food is GE. Most of the crops are grown there.
I thought GE made cars.
Yeah, they're a bit hard.
That's GM. Did GE and GM merge and become GMO? Yeah.
Oh, you've got a good sense of humour there, Vinny. I like it. Actually, that's a good point. Sometimes they call it genetic modification. Sometimes they call it GE. You know, they kind of flick the terms around a bit. I think modification sounds a bit better than GE. But as far as I know, cars haven't been genetically modified.
Modified some of them, surely, but not genetically.
Not genetically, definitely.
More like hydraulically.
Yeah, hydraulically. That's right. Yeah, you're talking to boy racer cars, but so that in the States the health statistics are pretty horrendous. But another thing is, since the incidence, once they've brought these GE crops in, the incidence of soya allergies have gone through the roof. Again, so no one's testing it because they, you know, in the States they don't label food, so you can't tell. Except, you know, they take people off it, and suddenly all these allergies and diseases go, but all I know is that the allergies, soya allergies, have gone through the roof. Who knows? You know, so it's a bit like you're playing with fire. You just don't know, you know, unless you...
You know what it sounds like to me? Sounds like somebody's deliberately contaminating the food supply and deliberately poisoning the population.
Well, you could easily think that. And the other thing is, also deliberate, there is a policy amongst these companies, I believe, of deliberately contaminating other non-GMO crops. So you get to a point where it's all contaminated, and people roll over and say, "Well, what can we do? You know, we just got to accept this." And in case in the States, it's now got to the ridiculous situation where, say, you're growing non-GMO corn, right? And your neighbor's growing GMO corn. And the reason people do want to grow non-GMO corn is it gets a much higher price because people are screaming out for non-GMO foods, or, you know, through Europe and the rest of the world. If you so happen that the GMO corn pollinates or contaminates your corn, right, and you get this GMO corn growing on your non-GMO corn farm, then a company like Monsanto, they're particularly good, they'll come over and they'll actually sue you as a non-GMO grower for having their product on your land and not paying for it. talk about polluter pays, it goes the other way around. So it's like you just get this contamination. Not only do you get something you don't want, and it ruins your crop, but also you're getting lawsuits against you for actually having your crop contaminated.
And then Monsanto winds up owning all the old family farms and can do whatever they want with them, including control the entire food supply.
Well, that's right. That's particularly the case in places like Argentina, the Philippines. It's a bit more difficult in India because of the land ownership thing, but particularly in Argentina, where you get the farmers are told that this stuff's going to be, you know, they're going to end up driving Mercedes in a couple of years' time. They're going to come rich. They're going to be top dog. And then they'll get them Zilla stuff and then rack up the prices, and they've got to buy all these extra herbicides and fertilizers and what have you. And the crops themselves, the seed is very, very expensive. They can't save their own seed like they've done for millennia. And next minute, they've had to borrow all this money. The next minute, they can't pay back their loans. So they get chucked off their land, and here, good old Monsanto takes over. And it's worse than India, where the farmers over there, something like maybe 250,000 of them, they just end up drinking the herbicide and killing themselves. Because for them, that's, you know, only what, for them, that's what they see, the only way out, which is absolutely tragic.
In fact, there was a New Zealand organic farm specialist or something of that nature that went to India to teach all of these communities and what have you really efficient organic growing methods, so that they didn't need Monsanto anymore and they could grow better crops and faster times and get bigger yields and keep all their seeds and everything, and just get those people out and make sure that their families don't have to get rocked by the horror of suicide.
Absolutely. I think you might be referring to a friend of mine, Peter Proctor. He's a biodynamic farmer, and he spent a lot of time in India going around showing them how to effectively grow, you know, using the organic materials from the land. I'm not sure if you're familiar with biodynamic farming. It's a form of organic gardening which Steiner came up with. But anyway, he just spent years and years doing that, and you have to give the guy a sainthood in a way, because that's what he did for, you know, just travelled all over India showing these people how they can sustainably and grow these crops and not get into huge debt, and, you know, do it all just using the materials on the land, self-sufficiency. So one good Kiwi is doing some good things, you know. So I assume you might be referring to him, but I know.
Yeah. I saw a little documentary, I think.
Sure. So there's always.
I'd love to interview him sometime if you could hook me up, bro.
Yeah. Well, actually, I haven't. When I was at the Polytech, he used to come and teach the students how to do the compost and so on, the biodynamic way. And he's a great guy, really, really soul of the earth, and you know, probably the best of New Zealand, that kind of, you know, Edmund Hillary pioneering spirit going and helping people the other side of the world.
Man after my own heart.
Oh, totally. You know, that's the kind of Kiwi that I like to think about. There's others that I don't like to think about, but he's certainly one of them.
Have you noticed how the Kiwis who like spend a lot of time getting educated here and then bring New Zealand out to the world, and then there's a lot of New Zealanders who go out to the world and get educated there and then bring it back with them?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's right. As I say, it's. I think the just one thing, why we called ourselves GE Free New Zealand in the food environment, and idea was that's what our mantra became, that's what we wanted to achieve. But in essence, a kind of organics, sustainable agriculture, horticulture is the way to go. And there's been many examples around the world, in India and Africa and a lot of places, traditional culture, where they get amazing yields from growing rice or other things without any high-tech GMO, high-tech fertilizers, which tend to poison all the soil, water, and so on, and doing amazingly, incredible results. So that's, to me, is where we should be heading. And because also there's such a huge market for these organic, you get a premium price. So, to my mind, that's where we should be heading.
Well, I was thinking more like the micro to macro level. So what you do is, instead of just, providing, let's say, business and educational incentives to let's say, bio-organic or simply organic farming practices, and you get everybody in their backyard. Everybody who's got like a shelf to put little plants and things on to be getting organic gardening going, the idea that everybody needs somebody else to provide their food for them means you're absolutely dependent on that that chain of supply. And I think this would actually help to cushion food prices, not to mention extraordinary effects would be held to reduce the amount of people going to hospital and getting killed by the hospital staff by overdosing them on drugs.
Oh, well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I don't know about you, but my father grew huge big organic vegetable garden, and that's what we ate. I've taught it I still do teach organic gardening to students, just to how to grow their own stuff. But it's something that I think should almost be mandatory at school to teach people how to grow stuff, just how to grow stuff from seeds to grow it on. And so you can become self-sufficient. And certainly in my business, I've noticed a lot more people wanting edible gardens, which is really good. Like people in the past, you say, do you want an edible garden? No, I haven't got time. I'll go to the supermarket. Now they say, no, I want to grow my stuff so I know what's in it. And I know, and they love it, So I think you're absolutely right. To me, just having, what it is, think locally. What is it? Think globally, act locally.
Micro to macro.
Yeah, just work on your own level. And again, that reduces dependence on some centralized food system like the big supermarket chains. You won't mention some of those. But
yeah, but then, of course, we've got the food bill. And then it basically, from what my recollection is, it'll allow people who are like food enforcers, and they can be like Monsanto employees or something of that nature, come into your backyard and have weapons and be immune from prosecution if they break something, And it's hold on a second. Didn't Monsanto buy Blackwater, which recently changed its name to Z, and then even more recently to something else, because they keep getting busted having all of their troops on frickin' LSD shooting up people in Iraq and what have you? Naked? Driving around in a Humvee?
Yes, it's not quite... it's... I know what you mean. You raise an interesting point regarding this the food bill, because we have a situation where, acting locally, so individually, people, if they want to grow vegetables on their own land, why not? Okay, then what's happened with a lot of local councils is, this is particularly relates to New Zealand exporters or growers who may be doing organic or non-GMO produced, they're getting great prices overseas, like in Hawke's Bay. And they've got together with the accountants and decided that, you know, they want to go GMO free, or, you know, to protect their markets. And that's happened in the far north. It's happened in Hawke's Bay. Auckland's agreed to it, Nelson. So you've got these councils acting locally, democratically deciding we want to be GMO free. And, of course, central government, in the form of this particular case, Amy Evans is saying through this food bill that no. Well, it's actually also through the RMA, changing the RMA, so that you cannot do that. It all has to be done centrally. We make the decisions about whether you be GMO free or not. So there's at the present there's a bit of a stoush where locally people are trying to create their own GMO free areas, and central government saying, can't do that, buddy. So it's what you're talking about, where it should be, you know, people should be at locally and decide for themselves what they want.
But yeah. Well, it's a hell of a lot more difficult to control and make depressed a whole bunch of people that can grow food for themselves that makes them healthy and full of life.
Well, yeah, I mean, to me, what keeps you a healthy body, healthy mind, and in some circumstances, if you look at a lot of traditional cultures, they'll say food is God. You know, food is like in Māori, you know, it's something you break the tapu, it actually you feed your guests. It's a very important part of the culture, eating food and healthy food. You know, it's essential. It brings people together and it creates health and vitality in all traditional cultures. So if you eat healthy foods and you drink clean water and you exercise, you know, you're gonna feel good. And maybe that's not what some people want, but they're kind of basic, you know, food, water.
Yeah. So what they do is they contaminate the water with fluoride and chlorine, goodness knows however many chemicals and heavy metals, etc. And not to mention the runoff from everybody's wheeze that are weeing out pharmaceutical, psychiatric freaking drugs. And then on top of it, they spray all your food with chemicals, poisons, and crapola, and make sure that it's nutrient deficient by intensely farming the stuff, so that even if you wanted to be healthy, you couldn't.
Yeah, yeah, I heard that there was, at the turn of last century, don't quote me on this, but it's something like silver beet had maybe 17 times as much iron as it does today. This was in the States. So, you know, like, when they were growing it on virgin soil, you know, which was had full of nutrients. So it's like, as you say, you know, even the stuff you grow, it's going to be more, not only all that, but it's also nutrient deficient in many cases. So, but yeah, that's just GMO.
Well, it's a food war, basically. I mean, it's whether or not you want to be able to provide food for yourself, or whether or not you never want to be able to have that choice and have to have somebody else who purposely poisons your food to supply it to you and everybody else for the rest of existence.
That's right. I mean, as I said, you know, to me, food is... they say food is medicine, actually.
Well, can I elucidate here? Because he actually struck on a point that I wanted to raise but forgot about. You know, the Hippocratic Oath, you know, first do no harm. That's what doctors are getting. All these doctors are approving all this crap, aren't they? You know, just saying, oh, it's fine, FDA approved it. You know, and then Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine and let medicine be thy food. Now, what's the one form of medicine that they don't teach you in medical school?
Food.
Nutrition.
Exactly, I know. Have you ever been to the hospital recently and try and eat the food they put in front of you after you? No, it's not good. I do totally agree with you. Although, as I say, in the States, there's thousands of doctors who are saying don't eat this GMO stuff. In New Zealand, I don't think they're very much aware of it at all, probably because they think there's not much here or they don't know about it. But I could not agree with you more that if you eat healthy, nutritious food and clean water, you can dispense with probably a lot of the those pills that in your cupboard, you know.
Well, in fact, none of those pills in those cupboards. I mean, virtually no pill on the market today that's produced by any major pharmaceutical company has any ethical reason for existing and has any absolute use over and above what people have discovered in herbology, for example, have already discovered about how many different diseases and everything that you can cure, you know. Yeah. Naturopathy and all of these sort of things, you know, it's the problem is anybody who comes out with a discovery or even finds an old discovery that winds up curing a disease that pharmaceutical drugs have been treating without curing for goodness knows how many long and draining your money out of your pockets and the state and the government and everything else, that person gets lambasted. They get their offices raided and they get destroyed in court and or hold off on for decades by the FDA and what have you. So it's basically come to this. There is truth and then there is fiction. And if somebody is coming at you from officialdom, you can be assured that they've got pockets full of fiction for you.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think that applies to the oil and all sorts of other industries where they're seen as a threat. I think one of the things about the body is it actually is designed to eat whole plants and not, you know what I mean, rather than highly processed foods. So yeah. If you've got highly processed foods plus GMOs, plus chemicals, plus water that's got nasty chemicals in it, you're really putting a huge stress on the body.
Yeah.
And it doesn't know what to do with half of it, and in many cases can't cope with it. And then if you load it with other pharmaceuticals, well, it's a slippery slope. But yeah, they're all tied in together. I mean, I think the GMOs have been shown just simply by the fact that some good doctors in the States have taken their patients off it, and all these life-threatening illnesses just disappear.
It's infected nearly everything, isn't it? I'm sorry. Continue.
I'm just going to say if the people are taking getting sick, and then they put pharmaceutical drugs on top of it, the body is getting poisoned from both sides. So food is to me. What they do with the food, not just environment, we can talk about that as well, but what you put in your mouth has a huge effect on your health.
And yeah.
I think, I'm talking to the converted, obviously, but I think it's such a simple, basic thing. The other thing I did want to say was, in terms of the food, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the what we call the Agent Orange corn and soy. Have you been keeping up to date with that?
I keep up to date with virtually nothing. I mean, not even my own work, apparently.
Oh, that's all right. You've got a lot on your plate.
See, well the thing is, I love the hilarity of people trying to cover news, because you know what happens when you get news? Well, a couple of days later, the real story comes out, and you look like an idiot for being so up to date.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yes.
If I haven't heard it, then it's news.
You haven't heard it. Also, what you hear is not what's real. It's the opposite usually. So,
well, from official sources, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Like Waddy's, for example. That's a very, very untrustable official source.
With this is something of great concern, is in Dow, as you know, Monsanto produces the Roundup Ready crops, which means you can spray the Roundup herbicide, which has been shown to be highly toxic, and Monsanto came out at one stage and said it was safe, and they were proven that it wasn't safe, and they were told to stop advertising as such. So the glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, highly toxic. That sprayed over millions of acres of crops in the US, Argentina, Canada, and so on. About four countries it's mostly done. Fortunately not here, and let's keep it that way. But the what's happened, you see, is... If this is basic science, you know, if you just keep blasting nature with one chemical, weeds, guess what happens to them after a while? they fight back and the weeds become resistant to the herbicide. So they can spray it and they get these super weeds in the States, just massive weeds that they can't control. So they think, oh, what are we going to do about that? Okay.
You know, this is also an interesting analogy for the amount of marijuana that's getting shipped in and smoked in the United States, you know, despite the drug war.
The weeds, yeah. Maybe they've become resistant to Roundup.
The stoners have become resistant to 9mm rounds.
Roundup rounds
with the Texas cops, you know, with the hats and the shiny badges and the enormous shotguns and big trucks and whatnot.
Yeah, I can just, your imagination is running wild on you there.
My bad. Sorry, take us back somewhere reasonable, please, John. You know, you're the guest, you know, you've got to ground the host on occasion, kind of like a parasite.
That's all right. We could go down that track. Anyway, so these crops are, what's happened, the weeds have become resistant. They get these super weeds. They're in quite a few states and they just can't be controlled. So they think, okay, what are we going to do now, guys? All right, so we'll come up with this plot, this fiendish plot. We'll actually make it so these crops can be sprayed with more toxic chemicals. Because the Roundup's not working, we'll make them so that you can spray more toxic chemicals on. They won't kill the plant, but it'll kill the weed. So some of the crops are actually got, they've got 2,4-D, which is about 45% of the, say roughly half of what was called Agent Orange. Now, do you know about Agent Orange?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You'll be old enough. So some young people may not be so aware of Agent Orange, but if you knew about the...
No, I'm only 29, trust me. I was not there when it was all going down, son, but you know
about it. You know about Vietnam.
Well, and also New Zealand's involvement there. We had the Agent Orange was made, and I think the old factories and whatnot down the line have such contaminated soil, and like all the factory workers are sick and all of that kind of jazz. And the huge quantity of the spray over Vietnam, of course, I'm just reiterating for the uninitiated, of course, is that so many children have been born deformed. Now, I don't know about you, but think about deformities where a life is not whole and it cannot be lived as it should, all right? And the inherent pain and struggle of actually seeing that every single day, never being able to escape from it. That's what Agent Orange has done to the whole country of Vietnam.
You've pretty much hit the nail on the head. It's produced actually by Dow up in a place called Paruku in Taranaki.
In New Zealand, it's known as not even Dow.
Not even Dow. and yes, they've got huge problems. There was a documentary about it where the people are sick as anything and the whole it's horrendous. But anyway, these are people who've been working on it and as you say, deformities and sickness and cancer went through the roof. But certainly in Vietnam, the Americans would spray this Agent Orange over all the forest, and it's defoliant, so it would strip, burn all the leaves off, and then they could go and kill all the Viet Cong. So it was a double whammy, you know. They'd spray all the forest, kill them, and then, of course, what happened, as you said, the deformities went through the roof. So when you talk about Agent Orange, you're talking about one of the most toxic chemicals. Particularly, it's got this chemical dioxin in it, which is the most toxic part of it.
And the fact that New Zealand sent its own soldiers into that bush, and when they came home, a lot of them chose not to have children and can't actually continue their bloodline on. Thank you very much.
Exactly. So we've had not a particularly good association there. So anyway, so when you say Agent Orange, you're talking about something that is highly, highly, highly toxic. And so 2,4-D is, as I say, around 50% of Agent Orange. Now, so they decided, well, these weeds are growing like crazy, you know, like triffids, okay? So we've got to bring in the heavy artillery. So Dow have actually designed this crop that either you can just spray 2,4-D on it, or you can do 2,4-D, glyphosate, and glyphosate. So three herbicides, three very, very toxic herbicides. Now, so in answer to this problem, instead of thinking of another solution, they've actually compounded the problem, because getting back to the original thing, if you spray Roundup all over the weeds, they get resistant to Roundup. So guess what happens if you start blasting it with even more toxic herbicides? They'll get resistant to that as well. And so what they've done is they've designed this crop, or corn and soya, that's resistant to 2,4-D plus those other ones. Now, in the US, they haven't actually approved this crop, these crops. And in Australia, it's they're not allowed to spray 2,4-D. In Europe, they're not even considering it. In the States, they say that they need more safety data. But here's the thing, as they say in America, here's the thing. So in New Zealand, our we have this relationship with Australia called the Food for Sands Food Safety. It's a food safety, keeping it simple, that we have this connection with Australia. It's to do with free trade. But anyway, to cut a long story short, the Minister of Food Safety basically approved, ticked off this, what we call Agent Orange corn and soya, without any proper feeding studies or safety studies. Zilch. Just, it was almost though they were tripping over each other to sign this thing up for Dow, when no one else had. And as I say, it does astound me, because having been to Parliament and, you know, presented all these facts and say, look, you know, there's no proper feeding studies here, there's no safety studies here, how can you approve it? And effectively they come back and say, tough pickies, it's going through. But what astounds me is that not only is the government essentially like a signing authority for these companies or corporations, but they seem to be tripping over each other to actually sign it. It's kind of beyond my comprehension. But that's the state of play in New Zealand. We have effectively said, "Yep, we'll sign up to this over and above everyone else in the world. We're number one off the block." Agent Orange corn and soya. Now, I don't know about you, Vinny, but I wouldn't want to feed that to my children, my mother, my cousin.
Or your dog.
Or even my dog. Yeah, I just heard him bark then. He agreed.
I really wouldn't want to feed it to the freaking cockroaches, you know. I just think it'd be inhumane.
I know, but I mean...
Hey, the poor bastard, you know, just thinking about the lion on their back suffering.
No, you poisoned me with Monsanto products, you bastard.
In this case, it's not Monsanto, it's Dow, but it's...
potato, potato.
Yeah, I know, but it's...
Did you actually hear about the Swedish economic study that they got a supercomputer to put in all the world's financial data, and they found out that everything's owned by 147 companies, and they're all in cahoots and conglomerates and everything, and they're all owned by like 14, 17 families or some crap.
That's
so,
right. The
way I look at it, doesn't matter what the label of the company is, doesn't matter who technically owns it or anything, because they're all owned by the same scumbaggery anyway. It's almost like, you know, they're like the Borg. Everything gets assimilated.
I think you're right. I mean, the thing is, it used to be maybe a while we used to have governments used to be of, by, for the people. Now they're of, by, for the corporates, and they really have effectively become, in my view, become signing authorities for corporations, and that is concerning because, I mean, if you say you're a food safety minister or environment minister, you would think, and a lot of probably Kiwis still probably hold the idea that, yes, indeed, they're going to look after the environment, or they're going to check this food, this novel food, and make sure it is safe, and that there's going to, and they would assume that there's been studies done, safety studies done, on, and in other words, feeding trials, where they've actually might have fed it to animals or rats or whatever. But in this case, there was no feeding studies. Zilch. And so you ask the question, how can you say this stuff is safe when there's been no studies done on it? I mean, it just begs the question. I just don't know how these people can actually justify it. It puzzles me.
Well, it puzzles you because you're not a criminal psychopath.
Well, I guess the thing is, you know,
it suddenly makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it? You know.
Well, I mean, the thing is,
am I wrong? You know.
Well, look, put it this way: I've got a family. You know, I've got children. They want to probably have children soon. I'm hoping, and one of them, and so. You know, this is another thing. You're not going to like this, but one thing is that GMO crops, particularly the Roundup Ready and the BT, which is the most of them, they've noticed in animals that are fed this stuff that after about two generations, they go sterile. They go sterile. Bang. Now, if you're feeding this en masse to the public, I don't know if you've noticed, but fertility rates are going down like big time, hugely. We could get to a situation where kids can't have children. You know, maybe that's the idea. I don't know, to keep the population down. But
it'll be like the children of men, you know.
Well, but the thing is,
I interviewed this guy, Kevin Galilee, John, and he said that because of all these deliberate defertilization techniques, you're going to actually eliminate about 4 billion bloodlines or something like that by the year 2020, and you're also going to drop the IQ by like 20 points on average.
Yeah, well, I think it's as I say, from where I'm coming from, you know, I'm thinking of, which is only natural, you know, you think of your family, you think of you're carrying your bloodline on. I mean, it's just an inherent thing. And the thought that they could effectively all become sterile, and, you know, they might have kids, but those children would be sterile. To me, that's a red line. And I guess the other thing is when your environment could be so polluted that it could never, ever be recalled. Because the thing is, once once it pollutes the genetic pool of a plant like corn, then it can never be recalled. It's like, you know, you can take a chemical out of the soil, but if you've got, like in Mexico, for example, they've got all these traditional varieties of corn, and the Monsanto got their stuff in there, and that's polluting all the traditional corn. And by the way, Mexico has banned GMOs, which is great, told Monsanto to pack their bags, but... that's going to pollute it, but that's forever, you know. And that's the thing. So you're polluting the gene pool forever, and that's where another red line is. These guys just, well.
Here's the question, more poignantly, not how many lines they've crossed, nor which lines were crossed. How do you push them back over that line, John?
Well, I think in a way, see the train. I'll tell you something. There is. It's not all bad news because I mean. And people like yourself are raising awareness of these things. But when the whole GMO thing started in the States, and the Monsantos of this world had this vision that within about a number of years, basically the whole, they had it all planned that every single food on this planet would be GMO'd, and they would flood the market, they'd have the whole market sussed. And they were going full steam. The train was coming out of the station. It was picking up speed, and it was looking like, yeah, guys, we're onto it. Then a gentleman by the name of Ahmed Putsai came along. Now, he was an internationally acclaimed scientist he was doing research on potatoes, and a particular gene constructing potatoes. And internationally acclaimed, he'd done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of scientific studies, highly respected. He wasn't even thinking that GMO was good or bad. He was just looking at what was going on. Well, I think it was the lectins or something in the potato. What he found was when he was looking at the animals, the rats, whatever that were being fed, that it was so disturbing what he saw that he raised his flag. He said, "Look, you know, this needs to be looked at. This needs to be researched properly. Something's not right here. Very wrong." So he told the Rowlett Institute, he told the director, and he said, "Oh, good, good, you know, we'll do this." And then in the next day or so, what happened was there was a phone call from, I think, from Monsanto to the White House, from the White House to Tony Blair to the director, The next day, this director was fired. The scientist Ahmed Bhutto was fired, denigrated. His results trashed.
I'm surprised he didn't get assassinated.
Well, that's the thing. They probably, if they're looking back, they probably should have just gone in there. But anyway, so they basically
vilified. Stupid bastards.
Yeah. Anyway, they completely vilified this guy. And he had a mug, so he couldn't talk for, I think it was a year or two, I can't remember. Anyway, when the time came for him to, he could talk, like the press just went crazy. They just stampeded around his place. He interviewed them. He was released all this research. It went viral. As a result of that, in UK, particularly in Europe, they basically just empty the shelves of a lot of GMOs. It creates such a wave away from GMO that effectively the train was slowed down almost to the point of stopping because it was starting to run away, the GMO train. So I'm not saying that's the only thing, but it was quite pivotal. And because normally, as you say, anyone who comes, an independent scientist who comes up with research to say that, you know, GMOs are is a problem, they'll get stomped on. Seems to be the normal thing, particularly with Ahmed Bhutto anyway. And so it created a real furor, and that was probably helped to sort of pull it back. Now, probably, in my opinion, and it's not mine, but Jeffrey Smith came out here and stayed with us here, and he's very active in the USA. He's in the GMO scene. He came out here just before Christmas. But anyway, he talks about these things called the tipping points. And this is applicable actually to lots of different things. Because the only way you can, the most effective way of dealing with this whole GMO thing, and it applies to a lot of things, is the market share. The money in the pocket. You know what I mean? That's the only thing that affects it. And he says when you get to a certain point where the suppliers realize that that they're going to make more money out of GMO-free stuff, and that's what consumers want, and if they don't get on board, they're going to lose market share and they're going to lose money. Bingo, they change. And that to me, is the most effective way of countering this whole thing, you know, is market.
It would have to be a free market rather than a market controlled by ruthless tyrants populated entirely by consumer slaves.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I look at this countdown issue thing where, you know, people suddenly think, oh, well, gee, you know, we actually have some power here because, for example, we don't have to shop there. If there's another shop there that's New Zealand owned, well, you know, I haven't got anything personally against Australians, but maybe the firms. But what I'm saying is people can say, well, I can choose to go there. Now, if enough people do that, it can have a shift. And then, of course, the people supplying it, they know that. They'll notice it. And they may change the way they do things. So what I'm trying to say is consumers have a lot more power than they think. You don't want to think that you're some sort of zombied out person who can't do anything. You know, consumers have a lot of power, and if you decide that you're going to, ask for GM. I mean, New Zealand's not nearly as bad as the States, but what I'm saying is, in the States particularly, that's swinging the whole thing. And Jeffrey Smith said they've passed the tipping point. So, you know, it's the only thing these guys understand is the dollars and cents. That's the only thing that drives the whole thing. You can talk to your blue in the face about the fact that it can poison and sterilize the whole population and destroy the environment. Won't make a iota of difference. It all gets down to bucks. So you've got to use dollars. That's the way to do it. Shop, you know?
It's like starving a creature of a nutrient that it needs in order to perpetrate its scumbaggery.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to sort of, how can I put it? In a way, it's you've got to play their own game.
You know, this reminds me of that scene in Jaws when he says you're either going to kill this animal or you're going to cut off its food supply.
Say that again. You're going to kill this animal.
Or you're going to cut off its food supply.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's
time we got out of the water, folks.
Yeah, I agree. But I think the point I'm trying to make is that consumers do have power, and their power is what they spend. But, you see, before that, people have to have more awareness. They need to be aware. They need to know them. That's partly what we do. Well, largely what we're doing at GE3 New Zealand is actually getting people to know about these issues. I mean, how many people know that our food minister has just approved Asian orange food, which could poison 4 million Kiwis? How many people know about that? I bet very few. They probably think they're looking after us. I don't know. But I'm just saying, first of all, you've got to get aware of this and say, what? Or that, how many people are aware of what sort of foods are genetically engineered? We should talk about that in New Zealand.
Shortly. I reiterate as I've said many times on the radio before, if it comes from an official source, whatever they're telling you is probably the exact opposite. So if the government tells you they're taking care of you, they mean it in the mobster sense of the word. We're going to take care of you. You know?
I agree. I actually have this attitude now. If as you call him, the Prime Minister or whatever, if he says one thing, you need to think the opposite. If they say this, that means the opposite. You almost got to do a double take. But yeah, I think it's if people need to become aware of what the issues are, and then they can take some action, and there's a real empowerment in taking action. You know, just to sit there and feel helpless. Oh, you know, these guys, you know, they've got us. You know,
well, they've got me with their soft kill bioweapons. Oh.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit here and take it. You know, I don't know what the Kiwis used to have this thing like with the nuclear free. And the Springboks, where they would stand up and say no, but I'm not sure. I'm hopefully there's a groundswell, but it just seems to me there's a general. Maybe people are too tired trying to pay off their student loans and worn out and financially and everything, and just trying to make a living or just trying to survive, that they haven't got the energy.
Yeah,
and to even read about this or know about it.
Nor the inclination, and also they're probably all dehydrated because they're drinking these sports drinks that are full of salts and stuff like that in order to rehydrate themselves. And again, because everything that's been told to us over a long period of time, everything about health, knowledge, history, the way the world works and everything like that, about fairness, about freedom, about education, about authority, because it's all been a lie, it means that every single one of those lies is trapping you in some way. So people are trapped by 1,000 different lies, 1,000 different times a day. How do you get out from under that rubble? You know, and it's amazing that a few of us have made it.
Well, that's right. I mean, although, admittedly, was it Goebbels or someone said, if you're going to tell it, well, no, I can't remember. One, you're going to tell a lie, tell a whopper.
Yeah. People are more likely to believe a big lie than a small truth.
Yeah, exactly. So just keep telling whoppers. But I think the point I'm making is somehow getting the awareness out there. This is what the situation is, and what can you do?
Well, it's persistence. I mean, like this subject often turns people off because they get freaked out by the implications. And you know, it's okay. You know, if you can get freaked out, you're not ready for it. You're not ready for it. Statistically speaking, it takes 7 people to say something to you before you'll actually start to accept the possibility of a new idea and refuse all your denial and emotional grabbing on to their previously held beliefs. So I say all you got to do is just throw in a little information grenade. You know, tell someone, yep, you're about to be exterminated by ruthless criminal scumbaggery, food agents and what have you. See, look, there's the food truck right there. It's going to kill you. And they go, no. And you go, okay, you know, off you go. You know,
Oh, you're right. I mean, your first natural response is when someone says to you that you've just had this food approved by your government that you know, it's got this Agent Orange, which was used to destroy and poison millions of Vietnamese, and they said it's okay. The first thing you say, no, that can't be right. Surely they just wouldn't do that. No safety studies. Come on, you've got to be joking. So the first thing is you don't believe it. You just don't want to deny it because it sounds too crazy. And then you dawn on you that, oh, no, this is actually true. And then you say, okay, what can I do? I can either give in to fear and think, oh, well, you know, there's nothing I can do, or I'm actually a consumer. I do have, you know, what the most effective thing I can do is to grow my own food as much as possible, buy whole foods, buy organic foods if I can afford it, or try and grow them if it's not so easy. And by doing that, you're doing something positive for yourself, and ultimately you're going against what you know, what other people want you to do. You know, you're doing it for yourself and ultimately for everyone. So it's regaining power. Knowledge is power. But you need to know. I think you need to know what these things are, even though they're very hard to handle. You need to know them, and then you decide, okay, what can I do positive that's going to change that? Because when someone's faced with something is, you know, my God, these guys are happy to poison us, you know, and sterilize us. You think, can't be right. But then if you can accept that and then suddenly say, what can I do? And that's the key, I think, you know, is awareness and then take some positive action.